Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome to the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs. And as always, I want to give a proud shout out to our proud presenting sponsors. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. You can go call them today for a free consultation, 423-245-4185, or visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. We'll be on live here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. So over the next 59 minutes, we will take your questions. We'll discuss Tennessee's 24-17 win on the third Saturday in October over Alabama, a win over a top 10 team, Brent Hubbs. Tennessee is 6-1, 3-1 in Southeastern Conference play, firmly right back in that college football playoff conversation. It wasn't pretty, but Tennessee got the job done. It's a pretty good spot to be in heading into the second bye week.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talked about it all offseason. What do you have to do? And what Tennessee needed to do was they needed to find a way to be, at worst, a one-loss team heading into the second bye. And that's exactly what they are. You know, is it exactly the way it's supposed to be? Is it laid out the way it's supposed to be? Does it look how it's supposed to look? No, it doesn't. But the results are the results. And what Tennessee wants to do is, you know, stay in the race and keep pushing this as hard as they can push it. And every week counts, and you just do it by any means necessary. And right now it's Tim Banks' defense and enough of the offense in the second half to get it done and get Tennessee where they need to be.
Yeah, we're going to recap all that was, all the different angles from Tennessee, Alabama. We're going to discuss kind of where Tennessee is at this point in the season. Of course, no game this upcoming weekend. Tennessee has that second bye week. And we're going to take all of your questions over the next hour or so. Matt Ray, big weekend in recruiting as well. Matt Ray is going to join us at the bottom of the hour around 8:40 Eastern time. Let's start off with that Tim Banks defense. Obviously, the story of the night. Everybody wants to talk about the offense, and I get all that, but story of the night, once again, Tennessee's defense holds Alabama to just over 300 yards, under 80 yards rushing. Jalen Milroe did not take over this football game. He had 11 net yards. He had 41 game, but of course the sacks, he had 11 net yards, was out of the end zone, or did not find the end zone on the ground, intercepted him twice. Tennessee held Alabama to a 3-for-14 clip on third downs. Tennessee was really, really good in sudden change situations the other night. Back-to-back interceptions, those two defensive series, totaling 6 plays, minus 15 yards. Just another outstanding effort. And as you said last night, this is 100%. The reason you're in the college football playoff conversation right now is not because of Dylan Sampson, even though he's doing a heck of a job this season. Not because of Josh Heupel or Nico. It's because of Tim Banks and that defense.
Yeah, no doubt. And here's the thing about, and I thought you could say this about Tennessee across the board last night, but certainly the defense. I mean, they got better as the game went on. Their pass rush wasn't where it needed to be early. It got better throughout the game, became more effective. I thought Tennessee was the more physical team as the game wore on, Eric, really on both sides of the ball. I thought they wore Alabama down. Which is, I mean, what a flip, what a role reversal when you look at where this series has been. But I thought Tennessee's defensive front, because of all those bodies, just kept getting stronger and stronger. And the result of that front was the pressure in Milroe's face, the moving him down, you know, moving him around. I thought they did a good job with contain. They rallied to the ball. There were times that they spied a bit. Tim Banks was as multiple in that game as he's been as a defensive coordinator. Early in his tenure at Tennessee, because they didn't have enough Jimmys and Joes, they just had to blitz all the time, right? Every third down was just a sellout blitz. He sold out and blitzed some last night. He played some zone last night. They run some games up front. You know, he brought a linebacker. He dropped an in. I mean, he was as multiple as he has been really in a game as a defensive coordinator, which tells you that he thinks he's got a lot to work with and he can do more than he's ever been able to do. And I thought it affected Alabama last night. And listen, give a shout out to the crowd too. I thought the crowd affected that game from the get-go all the way through. So impressive performance, certainly for Tennessee. And you look at those last four Alabama drives, couple that with the sudden change stat you mentioned, which that's the second time this year we've seen that happen, right? At Oklahoma, Tennessee was terrific in sudden change defense. Mm-hmm. They were good again last night. Tells you a lot about the mentality that that defense has and what they bring to the table for sure. So impressive performance.
Yeah, going back to one of those specific sudden change defensive series, it was Nico gets hurt, Gassenmore comes in, passing situation, immediately gets flushed out of the pocket, just, by the way, flicks the wrist and goes 50 yards down the field. Anybody that says he doesn't have an arm, but anyway.
It was a punt. I mean, listen, I don't know what the play call was there, and I understand you got trust in him, and I'm totally interrupting your point, so we'll get back to your point. And I get that you got trust in him as a senior. Run the football there and punt it. Field position. I mean, that's just an awful ask of Gastonmore. It's not because Gastonmore can't throw it. That's just an awful ask to come in cold. And I don't know what the play call was there, but I thought for sure when he came in, I'm like, okay, this is a Dylan Sampson run. If they pop it and they get in a situation where it's fourth and short, maybe he considers it. But I mean, you're not going to throw this deal right here. And he did. Yeah. Long return. That looks like Alabama's in position. And then, as you were saying there, the defense went ham on him, went crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. You brought him in. He was cold. That's the biggest thing, but they threw it. But anyway, the defense had to get out, sudden change, came back, and Alabama returned that down to the Tennessee 36, picked up 4 on first down, holding penalty, set up 2nd and 16. Milroe hit it back out of the backfield for 2 yards. So it was 3rd and 14. It's loud. Delay of game. Milroe can't communicate, can't get the snap off. It's 3rd and 19. 3rd and 19, could have called another delay game. Could have called another delay, but there was confusion. Dominic Bailey gets up there, forces a intentional grounding. I mean, that whole series, I just want to make that point about the crowd. I thought it was fantastic last night. That whole series was chaos.
Yeah.
And it was credit the defense, credit the guys in the stands and the gals in the stands at Neyland Stadium. I thought that was impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's what you got to do. I mean, they needed help, and that crowd was engaged all the way through. And the game was fast. The game felt fast for Jalen Milroe and for Alabama. And Tennessee never let him get in a rhythm. And obviously a terrific performance. I a performance you had to have. I didn't think there was any way that game would be 7-0 at the half, but it was. And for, 3 straight weeks, they've gone to the locker room, and Josh Heupel, not smiling, but going, hey, man, we're okay because of what the defense did for us in the first half. And it's worked out 2 of those 3 times. Now, the offense got to pick it up moving forward, but Tennessee's been able to work it out the last 2 at home. And credit to home crowd and the defense for being able to hold them in it, and then the offense coming to life with a few plays in the second half.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. I want to get into a bunch of y'all's questions here in the next couple of minutes. We got plenty of time, so just send them in. I'm bookmarking them. We're gonna answer as many as we can. Talked about the defense and just keeping you in ball games. Just it's continuing saying, hey, go out there, keep us in the ball game. I know it's a tough ask, and Alabama ran twice as many plays as Tennessee did offensively in the first quarter, so they were getting tired as the game went on. Offensively, again, 3rd straight game, you're shut out in the first half. The run game, for some reason, gets going in the second half. Dylan Sampson comes alive. He had 33 yards rushing or something like that in the first half. He had 55 yards rushing on that one series that he found the end zone, and that was big. Of course, he came alive, finished around 140 yards rushing. Josh Heupel, Darrell Sims, they've all said it's a little bit of better execution, wearing teams down, whatever the case is. You'd like for that to start in the first quarter, but the run game comes alive in the second half. And in the first half, there were some drops. Don't get me wrong. The receivers dropped some footballs, but Nico missed too many wide open receivers. You wrote about it today, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, Tennessee could have had 40 points on the scoreboard. Tennessee left so many points off the scoreboard because you just couldn't connect down the field passing. I mean, Nico missed on several wide open, and then when he had a good throw, there were several where his receivers just didn't help him out. I mean, the whole passing game at times looked out of sync. Give him credit. I thought a really, really bad interception after he got hit and came back in. Really bad interception. Second half, he made a couple of throws that were just gorgeous. That throw to Dante Thornton rolling out to the right was beautiful. His throw to Chris Brazel to the go-ahead touchdown, just a dime. And so that's the Nico that you've heard about, you expected to see and all that. You got to take some growing pains along with it. He was not great last night, but Brent, I thought he grew up in that football game, made some plays that got Tennessee a win.
Well, and we'll see how it translates moving forward. I thought it was interesting. I felt it at the time, but I didn't know because you're in the middle of doing everything and didn't have a chance to really track it and chart it, but I went back and looked at it. I felt like the scramble play, it was almost like a weight was lifted off his shoulder or something after that. I likened it on the phone. This is going to be a really bad pop culture reference, but it's almost like in the movie Days of Thunder when Cole Trickle gets through the wreck, right? And it's like, oh, and he gets through on the other side. He's like, hey, I'm okay. And like Nico makes that run. And after that, it felt like he just started playing again. He was playing instead of trying to be so precise and stuff. I mean, after that 26-yard run, Eric, he was 6 of 9 for 88 yards and a touchdown. Prior to that, he was 8 of 18 for 104 yards, 3 sacks, and a really bad interception. He was more accurate with the ball, it felt like. He was more decisive with the ball.
Yeah.
You know, I like this. I don't want Nico to run it. I don't think he needs to run it 15, 18 times a game. I don't think they need to call runs like that, like what Alabama did early in the year with Jalen Milroe. I think Jalen Milroe's a little bit banged up and beat up because they've run him too much, okay? But I like this, what we saw last night. First read, second read, it's not there, let's get out. And instead of taking a sack and it becoming third and 13, now let's run for 4 yards and we're in second and 6. Or you run for 5 yards and you're in second and 5 or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be a 26-yard scramble. Just keep the chains moving and make it more manageable than what you're doing. Again, I don't want him running all the time. I think you can call some design runs from here or there, some zone read stuff. They did that a couple of times. But if it's not there, get gone and go move the sticks forward. Move the yard marker closer to the first down line. And I thought that was big for what he did last night. I thought Hendon Hooker, for all of his running, did as good a job of that as anybody, right? Escaping a Houdini play here and all of a sudden turning a 2-yard loss or a no gain into 6, 7, 8, 9 yards, and now you're managing the game. I thought Nico did a much better job of that, particularly in the second half. To me, that's something that is a real positive potentially moving forward, because the offensive line was better. Okay. They were much better. But it's never going to be perfect in this system. There's oftentimes going to be a free rusher. It happens. You know, you got choice routes. Receivers don't run what they're supposed to run sometimes. They're not on the same page. So how do you bail out of a bad problem? How do you get out of a bad problem? Just use your legs a little bit. And I thought Nico did a really good job of that in the second half. And I thought that was pivotal for Tennessee to stay out of so many third and long situations, which was a huge problem for them in a couple of previous weeks.
Yeah, and it was a huge problem for them in the first half. Mm-hmm. It was like 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. It felt like it was on repeat. Two quick things here before we get into some questions. You brought up that first one, offensive line. Yeah, there were some pressures here and there. Lance Hurd gave up a sack. John Campbell, and it looked like maybe Cooper Mays on one play had some pressure. But overall, man, I thought the pockets were clean. I thought Nico had time. I thought it was of course, you blocked for 200 yards on the ground. I thought the offensive line played significantly better. And you mentioned it's not going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. But I thought the offensive line played significantly better, so that's good. Want to get your thoughts real quick on special teams. I'm surprised a couple of those times, and I want your opinion on this. I didn't ask you yesterday. They trotted Max Gilbert out there for a 53 and a 51-yarder. Was Tennessee just so desperate for points that they trotted him out there? Because I thought a couple of those fourth downs, you know, Tennessee would go for it normally, but just where points are so few and far to come by here lately, I thought maybe they were sending him out there some prematurely. And then obviously Jackson Ross, I thought, had a really good game. 2 punts inside the 20, 1 inside the 5. He averaged 48 yards. Josh Hoppe, you wrote about this, maturing as a head coach, playing the field position game, leaning on the defense, and Jackson Ross played a big, big focal point in that.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm looking here I don't remember what the down and distance was on the 2 field goal attempts. I don't know if those were even manageable ones or not. Obviously, they felt like he had a pretty good warm-up. I think they were just trying to get some points, just trying to get the lid lifted a little bit and get it going. I mean, if they didn't feel comfortable with what he did in pregame warm-ups, they would not have tried those. But, you know, obviously they felt like it was in his range and trying to get him to knock one down, and he wasn't able to do that. But, no, I think Jackson Ross, you know, obviously the 2 punts inside the 20, the last punt was just fantastic. And again, I don't know what Josh Heupel would have done on fourth down if Dylan Sampson had gained 3 or 4 yards there. That would have been a much harder call.
Yeah.
He lost 2 yards, so it became, I think, 4th and 6. So it probably became a little easier. But that's 2 weeks in a row now he's played field position, and he's benefited from it big time. He did it against Florida. They get the short punt. Tennessee starts inside the Florida 30-yard line. And then Dylan Sampson hits the home run, hits the touchdown. They do it yesterday, and then they get a holding penalty to help them, and they get in a situation where Brazel hits the fade, and it's really good there. This offense with where it's at right now, it's hard for them without explosive plays to find the end zone. They're not going to go 12, 13 plays consistently. They're just not executing well enough. There's a penalty here. There's a drop here. There's a turnover. There's a mistake. I mean, we've seen it on the opening two drives the last 2 weeks. So the chances of them going 85 yards and 14 snaps is probably not very realistic. They've got to have an explosive, or they've got to have a short field. In the second half, they got the explosives when they had a longer field. And then Heupel playing the short field made that a much easier opportunity for Tennessee to go score there. I thought it was a really good decision. Play into his strengths, which is his defense. Probably should have got a safety out of it because it looked like James Pierce got held pretty good on that play.
Yeah.
but you know, playing the percentages there, playing to your punter strength and your defensive strength, I think was a really bright move, really good move. That's why he gets paid a lot of money. You're supposed to make good decisions. And I give him credit for that. I mean, again, I didn't really like the Gaston Moore call. I don't know what Gaston was supposed to do there, so I don't want to criticize that one too much. I didn't like going forward on your own 10-yard line a week before at Florida. But playing what he did in field position yesterday, I thought was a really smart play. And he didn't really hesitate about it. You know, it was like, hey, we're going to kick it here. When Dylan Sampson didn't get anything, it was like, this is a no-brainer. We're going to kick it, and the defense rewarded him for it.
We're going to get into your questions here on the other side as we continue on with the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night, 8 to 9 o'clock on the BallQuest.com YouTube channel.
Are you going to get to questions?
I'm going to get the question. I've been teasing it for 10 minutes, so we're going to have plenty. I do want to give a shout-out real quick to our friends at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Absolutely. Three partners, Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, car wrecks, DUI, parental rights, injuries, all that and more. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. The firm, a vast amount of trial experience, been in place for 43 years. This partnership since 2012. They have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. They've won multiple awards. They have attorneys who have been rated by super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP here to help you. Go see them in person at 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. Free consultation by picking up the phone and dialing 423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185. Or you can visit them online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyer. Hey, welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind Sunday nights here during football season. VolQuest YouTube channel. We will not be live for the Rocky Top Rewind next Sunday night because there will be nothing to rewind for. Tennessee's second bye week will be back after the Kentucky game, but I do appreciate you guys for being here and sending in those questions. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Let's see. Ethan says, why isn't Jacoby Thomas getting more playing time over Andre Turrentine? Thomas flashed again last night, play in the backfield. His snap counts are lower than that of Will Brooks and Andre Turrentine. I do think Turrentine had a better game yesterday than he did against Florida. But it looks like back there they want to play four guys, and Will Brooks and Turrentine are going to get more snaps, but they're going to play Christian Charles and, of course, Jacoby Thomas.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with Thomas is it's still a little bit of the space game and some of the coverage stuff and kind of what they're trying to do and some of their zone things. I think he's a great downhill, you know, in the box, you know, go get it in the run game. He's obviously made some big plays and some big hits. He loves contact. I think they're just a little more comfortable right now with Turrentine in space. We'll see how this goes after this open date. I thought Turrentine bounced back. He tackled better. It was one of the keys to this game was getting the receivers on the ground. Now, Milroe helped you because there wasn't a lot of in-stride catch and run for those receivers. But Tennessee did a nice job tackling in space last night. So I think that was part of it. I know we got more to get to, and I joked with you earlier, but you were asking about the field goal. That first one was a 4th and 2 or 4th and 3. A little surprised that they didn't go there, to your point. I think that was a good point. I think what you ask is right. I think Tennessee was just trying to lift the lid off the scoreboard there, because that was a situation where certainly felt like that was a potential go for it. The other one was 4th and 6, maybe not so much, but 4th and 3 at that range. It's a little bit surprising they didn't go there, Eric.
Yeah, I thought they'd go for it, but honestly, I can't really blame them, right? Just trying to get some points. And Gilbert, it's not a thought about the leg. It's a thought about the accuracy, and he just missed that first 53-yarder. Obviously, they have confidence in him there. Herman says, Hubs, why don't we run DeSamp more to the outside? One play last night, I think he gained almost 10 yards or maybe more.
Well, I thought that was their big adjustment, or one of their key adjustments in the second half. I thought they did a better job of getting the ball outside on the perimeter. They got into their pin and pull game a little bit more. On the big long run that Sampson hit, I mean, they pulled a tight end, a tackle, and a guard. And it wasn't really a counter play. It almost became just student body right. I mean, they just pulled everybody out there and tried to get them on the perimeter and get them out there a little bit more. I thought once they hit a couple of those perimeter runs, Eric, it softened up the middle a little bit as well, and Tennessee was a little bit more effective there. But they clearly were trying to get the ball on the perimeter against Alabama's three-man front last night. The option play was a great call. The Brazel hole was a tough call there, but that was a really good play call by Tennessee on the option to get out wide, get outside the end there. And I thought they did try to run wide. I think I would continue to try to run wide, particularly against three-man fronts. Now, it's a little harder to do when you've got some five-man stuff out there, but Alabama was pretty tight in the box and was trying and could give up the corner if you could get that edge block. Tennessee blocked it a little better on the edge in the second half than they did in the first half.
Yeah, I thought several of those runs, you know, the counters I thought were pretty good play designs. Dylan Sampson's 36-yard run, I mean, he was going straight to the edge right there. I mean, he was trying to get the outside, get to that sideline, and he did. I love the speed option call. I thought it came at a perfect time as well. Unfortunately, that came back because of the holding, but I thought Deshaun Bishop limited opportunities, you know, averaging about 6 yards a carry. I thought Deshaun Bishop looked pretty good last night, and I thought he looked really good on that one play, but of course it got called back. Let's go to Will Brooks, or let's go to VolsFan98. Will Brooks' interception was huge, but his shoestring tackle of Milroe in the first quarter was also huge. Brent, Jalen Milroe would have still been running if not for that. I mean, that is the definition of a shoestring tackle. 4th and 1 or whatever. Everybody's kind of trying to clog up that middle. He takes a snap, goes around the edge, that C gap a little bit. Everybody's coming in. I think it was T-Lander got washed down, and Brooks is the only one there, and he sits back and, you know, makes a shoestring tackle. If Nico didn't fumble on the first possession against Florida, how different is that game? If Sampson didn't fumble the first possession yesterday against Bama, how different is that game? If Milroe scores right there, how different is that game? We don't know. That was a heck of a play there by Will Brooks, and of course, the interception to seal it, that was poetic there at the end for the Birmingham native.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the shoestring tackle that's the play. I'm not sure Alabama was going to go the length of the field. He's certainly glad to have the interception and end the game right there, which is what you want to do. And Will Brooks has got a memory for a lifetime, and anywhere that there's a Vol establishment, he's never paying for anything for the rest of his life to eat. He's taken care of in that regard. But that shoestring tackle was a huge play in the game. Because, again, I think one of the biggest things with Jalen Milroe is you cannot let him get in any kind of rhythm and get settled. How much would he have been settled if he'd have gone 60 yards for a touchdown right there and kind of got Alabama settled into the football game there? I mean, that was just a heck of a tackle, probably a little bit of fortune that he didn't get his foot through. That's the game of football, and give Will Brooks credit. He laid out, he made a play there. And I think that was a huge game. I'm not saying Tennessee would have lost because of that play if it doesn't work, but that was a huge play in the football game, a huge play.
Here's a good question for you. Cause I know that you're everybody's high on Jermon McCoy, but you've been saying that he's been the best transfer portal addition. Hard to argue that. Is he the best overall player? Is he playing better than Dylan Sampson? Is he playing better than, I mean, I guess Dylan Sanders will be the only other one in consideration. I think there's a real argument there. I mean, he's playing lights out right now. He had 11 targets, gave up 5 receptions. That interception that he had on the 3-yard line, he's reading his guy. He's looking in the backfield. He's seeing Milroe, so he can go make a play on the football. Whereas later in the game, when Ricky Gibson was covering Williams, he was just playing Williams, and he didn't know where the football was and wasn't able to go make a play on it. He's playing as good as anybody right now. Is he Tennessee's best player?
Man, that's a statement to say, you know, but because he's not as involved in every play because stuff doesn't necessarily go your way. You know, James Pierce is playing really well the last 3 weeks and affecting, he's affecting a lot of things every play. Here's where I'm surprised that I'm ducking Johnson's question. He's by far the best portal addition, and he is, if he's not the best player, you know, he's 1B, 1C right now. Because here's what I'm surprised about. If you're an offensive coordinator and you're watching tape, why are you still throwing at him? Why are you still going that direction? Like, listen, I like Ricky Gibson. I think Ricky Gibson's a fine player, and I think Ricky Gibson is getting better every week. But, like, yeah. I'm dumbfounded that McCoy has so many targets against him. I mean, is there something on tape that looks like he's susceptible to it? Because I've seen him play every snap that he's played in every game, and I don't see a bunch of flaws. I mean, he got the pass interference call last night, and basically both of them stumbled. I mean, it was not your typical blatant pass interference. It was actually a pretty savvy play by the receiver. I think he slowed up, knowing he had McCoy on his hip trailing, and you know got the call that way. But the thing about McCoy is he just doesn't play with his hands. He's not real handsy. He is a guy that he plays great technique. He's got great instincts, and he doesn't grab. I mean, you look at the slant breakups he's had. He doesn't hook the back of the body and turn the guy, right? I mean, like, his offhand is free where you're not going to call a penalty on him there. And what's remarkable is he was a high school wide receiver that played a year of corner at Oregon State and is now arguably an all-SEC corner and should be in consideration for All-American honors with the way he's playing right now. I'm sure – I mean, he's not Travis Hunter. There's other corners out there better. I'm not saying that. But this guy's having – in this league – this guy's having a really good year. In his first year at Tennessee, he's been unbelievable.
Let's go to Brian. Rush lanes were maintained pretty well for the most part. Shout out to the defensive line for doing the boring stuff well. I think that's a really good way to kind of phrase it. You've heard coaches, you've heard Heupel, you've heard Tim Banks. Like, do the ordinary things very well. Do the ordinary things at an extraordinary level. And if you do those, then you are going to be a really, really good football team. I mean, Tennessee's defensive line, they've got so many different packages and personnel groupings and all that, but they just go out there and they play sound. It's not perfect every single play, but more times than not, they're right. And because they're right, they're allowing those linebackers who's without Keenan Beeley right now for the rest of the season, that's unfortunate, allowing those linebackers to run and go make some plays. And man, I thought Jackson Moy played really well last night. James Pierce, who you just mentioned, Joshua Josephs, Bryson Easton had a couple. Dominic Bailey was all over the rewatch. I mean, those guys just continue to click. And you say it every single week, man, but like when you rotate, and it's got to be demoralizing for an offensive line when you're like on play, four or five, and, you know, you look over and you see four guys trotting out. Like, it's got to be the most demoralizing feeling, like, oh my gosh, I'm sucking wind, I'm tired. And, oh, look, they just have four fresh new guys out here. Here we go. Tennessee's defensive line just continues to do that, and it's a starting point. The reason Tennessee's defense is so well is because it starts well up front, and they deserve a lot of praise.
Well, when you rewatch a game and you're watching it, you're just looking up and like, wow, there's another load coming in. There's another load coming in. I mean, it's they do a really good job of rotating it. I thought Tennessee's retrace last night was really good. You know, Jackson Moy playing down the line. He made a really nice play coming off the goal line on a tackle to the running back, stayed in his gap, but really laterally traced and chased the running back down and made a play there. That whole group's played well. That's the best Dominic Bailey's played in his Tennessee career, in my opinion. I thought he played his gap responsibility and his rush lane integrity and all of those things were as good as it's been. That was as consistent as he has been. He did not get washed out of a gap. He held up really well last night. They're just good. And they're just a bunch of grown-ass men who are good. I don't know really any other way to say it. They're physical. They play violent. They play vertical. they had a long week on the practice field because Rodney told them all week about how they weren't playing smart enough. And if they'll play smart enough, they can be a lot better football, a lot better front than what they've been. I mean, 20 tackles last night is what they had, 4.5 TFLs, 2 sacks, I think 10 quarterback hurries is what the defensive front was credited with last night. That's game changing. That's how you play elite defense. It starts there. They played well behind them, but it starts with those guys. They were fantastic. And again, their depth showed up. They wore people out. Tim Banks told me, we were walking through the complex in the preseason. I was asking him some stuff about life without Jordan Thomas and how you're going to handle that with Boo Carter. What does he do? Where's he at right now compared to Christian Harrison? We were talking about some of this other stuff. We started talking about the defensive line. And I see you got so many bodies. What do you do? He goes, we're just going to wear you out. We're just going to wear you out for 60 minutes. If we stay healthy up there, you're going to be really tired of us in the second half. And if you watched on rewatch, Eric, in the first quarter, Alabama was protecting pretty well. Protection got a little weaker in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. Went downhill again in the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, when they had to have a play, they didn't have anything in the tank for Tennessee's defensive front, which is why Tennessee got 2-3 and outs, a turnover on downs, and an interception to close out the football game.
Was it last 4 possessions for Alabama, they gained 3 yards? Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's 3 or 4. Yeah, 3 yards.
Alabama did not have a third down conversion the last 3 quarters of the game. I mean,
yeah, I didn't realize that till I started looking at the stats. I knew that their numbers weren't good. I knew they had a couple early, but I didn't realize Tennessee had gone 3 quarters and didn't give up a third down conversion. Just, again, Josh Heupel said it best last night. Elite performance by that defense, and that's exactly what it was.
I want to give a shout-out here to Christopher. Christopher says, love listening to you guys down here in Argentina. Wow. All right.
I hear you, Christopher.
Thought I understood football, being a Cleveland, Tennessee native, go Boo Carter and Bradley Central High School, but I'm just taking notes every single show. Keep it up, guys. Christopher, we appreciate that. Brings up Boo Carter, man, and there at the end, boy, I said it on the postcast last night. I know it wasn't exactly the same situation, but very reminiscent of 04 and Wade and, you know, the Florida game. What a huge penalty there at the end for, was it Law, you know, for Alabama. Boo was jawing with him. He pushed first. Boo swung and didn't connect. Should have been offsetting penalties. It went against Alabama. But Boo overall, he's physical. I thought he played his best game a week ago. I think he's getting better. He's playing more. I know Harrison's a bit banged up right now, but you know, Boo, Tennessee's doing this, you know, the whenever there's 12 personnel, 2 tight ends out there, they're going 4-3. They put Caleb Perry out there and Boo's on the sideline. Whenever they go base personnel, 1 tight end, 1 running back, Boo's out there on the field. So he gets a ton of rep, don't get me wrong, but he just seems more comfortable the more he plays. And we knew that was going to be the case. Think he's going to be a special player, and he's already not playing like a freshman anymore. Still got a long ways to go, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't feel like a freshman out there where you got to tiptoe around him. He's played enough football.
Well, and I give Tim Banks, Willie Martinez a lot of credit and how they brought him along. Committed to playing him early, get him in some reps, get him in some set series, 3rd or 4th series of the game, get him in there, put, you know, get going and build and build and build. And, this was, I think, the best thing, unfortunately for Tennessee, obviously, but one of the best things that happened to Boo Carter and some other guys on this team, I think, was losing to Arkansas. I think once they lost that game, I think some of the guys realized, okay, this is an every week grind. What coach is saying about flush it and go to the next week is absolutely true. And I think Boo Carter's investment in film study, along with some other players, he's not the only one. I think there's some guys on this team that have invested more in their free time to get ready to play. And I think you're seeing the results of their play. Let's look at a young player, look at more of a veteran player, look at the difference in how they have been the last 3 weeks or since the open date, since the loss to Arkansas in the open date there. I mean, James Pierce is a different player. James Pierce played fine the first few weeks of the season. He was affecting the game, but he wasn't getting the numbers. He wasn't affecting it as much. Look at what he's done the last 3 weeks. Different gear, found whatever he needed to in the open date, he got it figured out. Look at Boo Carter the last 2 weeks. To me, that's a sign of guys who are focused and locked in the way that you need to. Now, you don't want to lose that focus during the open date now, But this has been a locked-in football team who's played desperate at home the last 2 weeks because they knew they had to win the football game. Now you got to keep with that edge and that mentality about you, and hopefully hopefully that your offense comes along as you go.
Yep. You definitely have to because, you know, offensively at least, that Kentucky front is going to be very, very challenging. And, of course, we know what's, you know, down the stretch on November the 16th. Here's a good question from Michael. I'm curious how Nico compares to other freshman quarterbacks, real or redshirt, Manning, JG, Ainge, et cetera. I remember Manning being sluggish for a while and getting comfortable late. Go back in the Wayback Machine here. I know Ainge started. He split time with Schaefer as a true freshman in 04. Tell us about some of those other quarterbacks, maybe a freshman, first year starting, and how Nico kind of relates.
Well, Eric Ainge was, I mean, Randy Sanders, it's the best coaching job he did while he was at Tennessee. It's what he did with Ainge that year in 04. They beat Florida. They go to Georgia, and they beat a top 10 Georgia team with a freshman quarterback. And Eric did a nice job. Don't get me wrong. Eric deserves the credit for that. But I tell you what, Randy Sanders did a terrific job managing a young quarterback there. Manning was he got into the back then there was some layups in November. Okay, he got the opportunity to play against some teams down the stretch who were not very good, and Tennessee had a great run game, very consistent run game, different style of play. They weren't putting as much on the quarterback, and Peyton really took off the back half of that season in 94, and his coming out party was essentially the bowl game. He actually played a game in Arkansas that it was his best football game in 95, the next year, where he carved up a defense, Joe Lee Dunn's defense. That was one of those blitzing everything, and he carved them up, and you're like, okay, this guy's different. But that was – he had started 8 games at that point, I guess, in his career. So I think the frustrating thing for fans with Nico right now is he missed layups yesterday. Mm-hmm. And in this offense, you can't miss a layup. And a layup in this offense may be a 50-yard touchdown pass. You know, that's like the seam route. I don't think Brew was going to score, but that seam route that he missed, I guess that was in the fourth quarter that he missed that one. Maybe it was in the fourth quarter early. Man, that's a play. You got to make that play, right? The opening slant, you know that play's coming. You've prepped it all week. You got to be on time with the slant there. Now, he came back with another slant to Brew on that same drive, and he opened, made a great play, waited till the second window cleared.
On third down.
Read the linebackers beautifully on that play. So I think that's the thing is, like, you saw some yesterday. You went, okay, there he is. He's back. You know, he's there. And then you saw some more. You're like, oh, dude, you're killing me here. The question is, can he eliminate some of the, oh, you're killing me plays? They don't all have to be rollout dimes like it was to Dante Thornton. He's just got to make some of the simpler plays a little easier. But that's a good question. I just use the Manning comparison because I think that's what everybody wants to really, you know, to really talk about. And that's kind of where the focus is. But it's hard. I mean, it's hard to play as a freshman. He probably had it too easy at the start, Eric. It probably went too easy for him. Didn't really get any adversity, right, till you get to Oklahoma and you get the ball knocked loose a couple times. And so it was probably a little bit too easy out of the gate. We thought that NC State game would be a real challenge and kind of a chess match for him, and they stayed in that bail coverage, and Tennessee just stayed in 12 personnel and crammed it down their throat. So it was a little easy out of the gate, which probably gave him a little bit of fool's gold, gave everybody a little bit of fool's gold about where he was.
We got Matt Ray is going to join us here in a moment. I do want to get this question first as we're talking about Nico right now. Tim says, hey, how big was it for Nico to take that big hit? Do you think it helped him, and that's what needed to happen all along? I won't go that far, but I will say, I mean, he even joked about it in post-game presser, right? It's like kind of snapped him into it, right? He came back in, offense moved down the field, he had that bad turnover, but he played better in the second half. He's been hit several times this year. That looked like a pretty gross hit. Replay shows, I mean, his body just smacks onto the playing surface, and at first you thought just concussion. You know, TV broadcast said it was his left hip. He was kind of grabbing the lower back. That was kind of a scary moment there for Tennessee. Of course, Gaston Moore comes in there, but I mean, that's the fear, right? It's like, well, I mean, last year you had Joe, your backup was Nico. He probably wasn't ready at points in time throughout the year, but you had a backup. Of course, Joe was hitting his backup. you don't have that security blanket this year. So it got real there for a little bit yesterday. And, you know, Nico was very quick, went to the tent, came out. He was throwing. You knew he was coming back in. But that was pretty gross looking. And I'm glad he's okay. And the way he responded from that, I thought was big. Again, had that interception, but came back and played much better in the second half.
Yeah, and again, that's what we were talking about earlier. I mean, you got to be careful how you run him. He's just – he's got to – you know. He's taking some hits anyway, so if you can get a little bit of positive yards, do that. I would not run him a whole bunch because you don't want to be in a situation where he's not playing. But at the same time, too, listen, man, is there a game left on the table? Maybe UTEP. Is there a game left on the table that's not an all-in, all-everything game that is going to be a challenge? I mean, Kentucky, I know they got beat at Florida, and they've got offensive woes, but they're going to get after you up front on defense. They'll come down here. We know how much this game means to Mark Stoops if he doesn't lose his football team between now and then. And obviously they've got some issues going on, it sounds like, up there that they're dealing with. But they're going to come down here and be ready to play. Vanderbilt's going to be a handful. Mississippi State can score, you know, in the stuff that they do. So every game you got from here on out, Georgia obviously is going to be a push it all in on the table type game. And that was what yesterday was. That was by any means necessary. If that means you had to run, you had to run. You know, and I just think that's the way you're going to have to play down the stretch. You just have to be smart with him. He's got to get down when he can get down, you know, take care of his body. Tried to run over a guy one time. It's like, go down. You don't have to do that. But he's going to have to use his legs to help this offense and to help himself out some.
Matt Ray joining the program now. Matt, I want to talk some recruiting. It's a big weekend. Of course, Tennessee got a 2026 offensive line commit earlier this morning. But first, your thoughts. You have a different vantage point than we do down on the sideline. Tennessee trailed at three different times in this football game, but finally the offense came around in the second half. The defense played elite throughout. Your thought on Tennessee's third Saturday in October victory, 24-17 over Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with, again, the first half struggles. I mean, three consecutive games of 0 points in the first half, but your defense is just playing at such a high level. I go back to the first quarter, in the first quarter there. I think it was with the Jermaine McCoy interception. Was that was in the first quarter?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, I mean, that play was huge. I mean, you haven't given up a touchdown, you know, in the first quarter to that point in the season. And he makes a play on Ron Williams and, you know, gets Tennessee out of the danger zone there for a little bit and gives you some time to breathe. And I just felt like Tennessee's defense answered the call so many times, on Saturday night. So an impressive night for Tim Banks' unit. But I thought the bounce back for Nico in the second half just kind of gives you, you know, especially if you're inside that building, some hope around, you know, that football team. Because when things click, that offense goes at a really high level. I mean, you know, when Tennessee drove down and took the lead there, there was a couple of throws that Nico made later in that game that only a couple of quarterbacks in the country can make. And the throw to Dante Thornton, where, you know, it was a true sprint out. He never stops and he just lets it fly. That ball was on the money. I mean, there's a handful of quarterbacks in the country that can make that throw. So, I mean, the ceiling's there, but then, you know, on the other hand, you have the interception that was really ugly, that it took most likely at least 3 points off the board there after he came back from the injury. So you have those growing pains with a guy that's still, you know, less than 10 games into his career as a starter. But I thought overall for Tennessee, obviously anytime you can beat Alabama, that's huge. But I thought there were bright spots again in the second half, and I continue to like what Tennessee does do to adjust in the second half. You know, no matter how ugly those first halves have been, they gave themselves a chance in all three of these contests where they have been shut out in the first half. So I think that's something that, you know, has at least been impressive in the fact they've been able to tune some things up and find some points later in those ball games.
Matt, Tennessee picked up a commit from a priority offensive lineman for the class of 2026 earlier this morning. Tell us a little bit about Brandon Anderson. What does he add to the class, and what is Tennessee getting in this offensive lineman?
Yeah, so Brandon Anderson, I mean, he's huge. He's carrying his weight very well, though. I mean, he's 6'5", 330 pounds, and you wouldn't guess it, you know, when you're standing next to him. But he's a big individual. He's long. He's got plenty of length. He's playing some right tackle there at North Cobb right now. But I would say that he probably probably projects along the interior at the college level. He's so good with his feet and ability to just kind of drive and be a road grader in the run game. He you know, really excited about his commitment. He had, you know, left Knoxville last week. He was very open with us that Tennessee was on top at that time. As soon as he got home, he announced that he was going to commit on December 14th. And I talked to him middle of the week, and I got the feeling if things go very well again this week, you know, December's not going to happen. You know, November's not going to happen. October's starting to seem more and more likely. And he made it to town again yesterday, and everything just went really well again, obviously, as it did for a lot of recruits. And, you know, he committed to the staff before he left Knoxville. And, you know, he's excited to be a part of the 2026 class. He played a lot of football with Dylan Lewis, Tyler Redmond, Ethan Utley, Justin Baker, some of the guys in this 2025 class for Tennessee that have been in it for a while and have been really good peer recruiters. And he really wants to embrace that role. So he jumps in a class that now features Faison Brandon and Carson Sneed along with him. And, you know, Tennessee's got some momentum in 2026.
Matt, you and Austin had a chance to catch up with several recruits, 25s, 26s, some 27s, leaving the scene last night at Neyland Stadium. Obviously, a huge win. But, I mean, you know, talking to recruits the last couple of years, they reference, you and I talk about this on Trail Tidbits all the time, they reference the environment of 22, the Florida game. They reference beating Alabama and being there and seeing that. And you guys had a chance to catch up with several of those guys leaving the game last night. What was kind of the message? I mean, obviously, it probably was one of the greatest scenes in all college football last night. I mean, probably a lot of good things were said about Tennessee in that environment.
I mean, I kind of laughed at this one last night because, I mean, Shady Hayward is obviously one of the best interviews, one of the, you know, best talkers in the class. Brent, you know, you've talked to him. He enjoys the talk. He enjoys the socialization aspect. And all he could say was pretty much, "I'm speechless." And I said, when's the last time you were speechless? He said, "I don't know." You know, he's like, I knew it was crazy. I didn't expect it to be this. You know, I think coming out of these visits, Eric, we've referenced that a lot, you know, 22 with Florida and Alabama. Tennessee had a lot of repeat visitors, you know, here for these two games in 2024. You know, Brandon Anderson, Gabe Osinda, Rodney Colton, the South Carolina linebacker commitment in 2026. So all those guys got to experience a little bit last week. So it was still fresh in their mind. But I still think it went to another level on, you know, Saturday night, obviously, with, you know, fans rushing the field, the goalposts coming down. You heard guys talking about that being a bucket list thing. You know, I think some of the kids that, you know, I didn't know as well or haven't had a chance to talk to as much, the, you know, the consensus for all these kids is it's a great visit. It's an amazing visit. They got to see all this that you typically don't get to see on a Saturday, and you expect that. But Tennessee had a lot of 2026 kids in over the weekend that they've recruited for a long time that we've got to know pretty well over time. And like Leo Delaney, Samari Matthews, Tyreek King. And I think, you know, Tyreek King just continues to be really impressed by Tennessee. I think he's seen a little bit of everything from them at this point. But, you know, talking to Leo Delaney, talking to Samari Matthews, it was just really genuine, like how much this type of visit means. They've seen every aspect of what this program has to offer so far. You know, been here 6, 7, 8 times. You know, so this was obviously different for a lot of guys, and you try not to, you know, jump into that visit. I had, you know, one, you know, Caden Carter last night said Tennessee went from number 3 on his list to number 1 just based off one visit. That'll wear away over time. Not all these kids are going to let a singular visit, you know, define their process. I think last night it pushed Tennessee probably to the forefront of the recruitment for Leo Delaney in what's a heavyweight battle. But he's not going to let that define his process. But what it helps you with Tennessee is a guy like you see with Brandon Anderson, right, who is already trending in that direction, and it gives him that nudge even more. It just solidifies things, you know, in different aspects for Tennessee. It's just a huge visit weekend. You just can't really say it enough.
Yeah, I'll say this. I mean, I've been in that stadium. I've seen a lot of big wins. I've seen a lot of weekends where Tennessee had a lot of really good prospects in. I've never seen a group of prospects come over a wall like a like a hockey shift change. They led the field. They led the field storm last
100%,
night.
100%. Yeah.
They were. I mean, it was like we're going. I mean, here we go. I mean, they were bailing off that wall like crazy. Which, again, I think tells you how engaged in the game that they were, how caught up they were in the moment and the atmosphere that was there. And coaches have said this for years, and obviously recruiting has changed because you've got NIL and everything else. But coaches have always said, if we can get them on campus, you got a shot. And boy, you've had them on campus the last 2 weeks, and you put on a pretty good show. Now, offensively, it's been maddening and everything else, but the environment has been elite. That environment yesterday was elite. It was loud from start to finish. It's a good show. Tennessee has taken full advantage of two quality home games back-to-back and put on a good show for recruits.
Well, I tell you, one thing as I talked to kids as Florida Week wrapped up last week, it was ugly offensively, and there's no doubt about that. But Tennessee ran that ball down Florida's throat in overtime right in front of the recruits. That was their last impression from that game, right? So that's something that stuck out with several of those. That everything ended in overtime right there. All of the celebration was right there, and Tennessee made it look effortless. You know, for really one of the first times in that game. And you know, you get Saturday night, you're right, Brent. Those guys were so engaged. I mean, George McIntyre, David Sanders, Nick Moore, Marion, those guys didn't sit down, I don't think, in the second half. They were up. They were talking to other recruits. They were so engaged in the environment, the game, and everything that was going on. And now I think, you know, for the coaches, obviously you want to get these guys to campus. You want to, you know, have that shot. And as you said, they put a good show on for them. Now these guys that have been peer recruiting, that have been selling Tennessee for a long time, have even more ammo. I said this in, you know, a thread on the board last night. Leo Delaney, I've heard him talk about it, but watching him talk about it last night, I didn't realize how big David Sanders has been in the process for him. He's very vocal in his ear. There's a really strong bond there between him and that family and everything that goes on. And Leo said, we're on the field. And he said, we're having, you know, a bucket list experience. And David is yelling at me, Leo, this is home. You know, Faison is telling him as he's leaving, what are you waiting on? Those guys have ammo now that you can go back to for the duration of this 2026 class. And I think that's what makes a weekend like this so big for Tennessee, is it's a pretty easy sale. Like if you don't come back to Tennessee, if you're a guy that's not able to make the trip back to Tennessee at some point for whatever reason, for a game day, or you don't get back for a junior day, and maybe the only time you get back is your official visit or whatever, you're not going to forget that experience on Saturday night.
Matt, how big is it Jaden Harmon shut this thing down? And did he really shut it down?
It's big, Brent. Yeah, I you know, Austin and I were talking last night, and I do, you know, believe Jaden in this aspect. He's told me the last couple of weeks that he's been here, this process has really, you know, wore him down. He flipped to Tennessee there in August. Alabama didn't give it maybe a day or two, and you know, the phone lines and the conversation picked back up. People pulling him different directions. People wanted to talk to him. You know, how's he going to go about this thing? He's entrenched in the middle of his season at Rome, which has been a really, really good season. I mean, just you go turn his tape on, and my goodness, you'll see why these programs want him. But it's big for Tennessee. This is a guy that you saw what Tennessee's linebackers were able to do last night. This is a guy that Tennessee believes can somewhat follow in the footsteps of a guy like Arion Carter and make those plays and be a three-down linebacker that, you know, wreaks havoc for four quarters. And Jaden Harmon is a big get for Tennessee when they flipped him. It's big for him to shut this down and be done. He kind of told me before the game that it was maybe trending that direction. We would see. He wanted to process everything from his official visit, but it was huge for him to see the football aspect unfold right in front of him last night.
Got a couple of questions here I want to ask you guys as we end the show. Let's go with there you go. Awesome. Two to three things Tennessee needs to hit on priorities over the bye week. Obviously, you want to get as healthy as you possibly can be. overall, I mean, you know, squirrel wide, there's an injury there we got to be paying attention to. Pretty healthy football team at this point in the season, but what does Tennessee need to focus on, Brent, over this next week?
I think on the defensive side of the ball, Jalen Smith's got to continue to come on, because I think Jalen Smith is going to have to play in space for Tennessee. I love Jeremiah Tealander, but I do think there is some space limitations sometimes with Jeremiah. And I think that's why you saw Jalen Smith in the game late. A lot of people are asking me, like, what is that guy doing? I'm like, well, who's your other options, right? You know, he's got to be a guy that this has got to be a big week for him, because without Keaton Peely, that rotation's a little bit different in what you do. I don't think Tennessee's going to suddenly be a dime package team to try to mask that. So I think Jalen Smith defensively has got to come on. That's a big one. I think, you know, offensively, you got to figure out where you're at receiver. If, you know, Squirrel White needs to shut down and get healthy, because Squirrel White at whatever percentage he is right now, or was even before he was taken to the hospital, is a struggle right now. I mean, look, if you're going to not redshirt Mike Matthews and Mike Matthews there, you got to play Mike Matthews. You got to figure out a way to get him involved. So I think that part of it, in addition to obviously Nico getting more dialed in, that's a given, but I got to, they got to figure out that rotation a little bit at receiver, Matt. I think Dante Thornton's limited a little bit. So yeah. I think that you got to figure out a way to get – and Mike Matthews doesn't have to play 30 snaps, but you got to play him with a package or two, with a plan and intent to get him the ball, to get him involved, and kind of get him going a little bit. I just think you're going to have him down the stretch of this season.
And Herman brings it out right here. I mean, it's annoying to see it all the time, but it's exactly right. I mean, in this era of college football, you don't play these guys, you're afraid you're going to lose them. And you see, I mean, Ryan Williams got targeted 19 times. 19 times. And Mike Matthews played, what was it, 5 snaps?
Yeah.
So I get the frustration, Matt. I mean, they need to figure something out there for sure.
Yeah, you've got to figure something out there. And I think, like Brent said, Dante Thornton's been limited. He still made a huge play last night. I thought, as much as we kind of saw Nico, some things click for Nico, I thought we saw some things click for Chris Brazell as well later in that game.
I agree.
Now, I feel like there were times where things were a little closer. He maybe didn't get a clean release on one where they, you know, miscued just a little bit, and it could have probably been a touchdown. But – for him, I think overall, you start to see him come along, but that rotation's got to clean up a little bit, and you've got to find a way just to get Mike Matthew a couple of touches just to see what he can do. You've got a chance with a Kentucky team that has issues of their own offensively and defensively. You're going to get the ball plenty of times against Kentucky. You're going to have a chance to put him out in space and do some things. And obviously your bye week's just, you know, other priorities, making sure you stay healthy, right, and then continuing to clean some things up.
Yeah, listen, I know Josh Heupel, because he wants to play fast. You don't want to rotate a whole lot, right? You don't want to rotate a guy in for a special play or this or whatever. But, I mean, you can open a series with a guy and throw him that sideways screen and let Brew be his blocker and see what that looks like. You can run a jet sweep. You can do a couple things early in that drive designed for him and see what you got there. I thought Josh Heupel did that with Chris Brazell on the slot fade. I mean, that was hey, no offense, Chaz Nimrod, I want Brazell in the slot here because I like my matchup with the safety. And if you're Chris Brazell, to me, that resonates, right? Because when the coach just said, I want this play to you. This is not a choice route. It might come to you. This ball's coming to you. Go make a play for me because I completely trust in you and believe in you. I think those things are important for young players. I think that's a big help to Chris. I'd like to see him do something like that with Mike Matthews to get him involved.
And let's not pretend like the tempo's where it is and where it's been in years past. I mean, number one, you can start a guy out there on the series and then, you know, sub him out later on because you're not going as fast as you normally do. Also, incomplete passes, a great time to get somebody else in the football game, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's just mind-boggling to me, and I'm not saying that he should be playing 50 snaps a game, but when Squirrel's banged up, when Brew's coming off an injury, when Dante Thornton is banged up, Mike Matthews is getting 5 snaps. I don't get that. Where on the defensive side of the football, they're playing 4 safeties and they're rotating and it looks good. And that hadn't happened in 3 years.
Well, I mean, think about this. I know we're out of time here, but I mean, Jermaine McCoy is banged up and doesn't play down at the end of the game. I mean, there's Jalen McMurray. Okay.
Yep.
But you played him early in the year.
Yep.
You got him a little seasoning. I mean, he wasn't thrown. That was not putting William Wright in the game against Alabama in 22, because you've made that commitment on that side of the ball to play people. Jalen Smith's in there at the end of the game, but you also played Jalen Smith at Oklahoma. You played him against NC State. Mm-hmm. You played those guys. I'd like to see them try to work Jordan Ross in a little bit if they can. But, hey, they got Caleb Herring in the game last night in a critical situation. He made a couple of plays. Their commitment on that side of the ball, regardless of situation, to play guys is benefiting them, and it benefited them last night. It allowed them to wear Alabama's offense out, and they just keep coming in waves. They've done a really good job on that side of the ball. I think the offense can do a little better job of that in some situations.
Tennessee, a 24-17 winner over Alabama. Tennessee jumps up, what is it, guys, four spots in the AP poll, all the way up to number seven this week, number eight in the coaches. Tennessee is 6-1, 3-1 in Southeastern Conference play, and bye week this week. So Tennessee will practice no game this weekend and then get geared up for Kentucky at Neyland Stadium. We're going to be off next Sunday night here on the Rocky Top Rewind. We'll be back after the Kentucky game, so that's when you'll see us next time here on the channel. But all week long, tons of recruiting stuff, Matt, AP, tons of recruiting stuff from this past weekend, the commit this morning, a lot of things happening right now, crossover season, fall baseball. I'm going to be in Nashville on Friday checking out the reigning national champions take on Western Kentucky, basketball starting off. There's loads of stuff happening over at VolQuest.com right now.
Absolutely, and I just get out of the way is what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you boys work it. You tell me what's coming next. Let me know when the next commitment's coming down the pike. You never know. There's always coming out of this weekend. You never know. There's always subject to potential commitment news. So we'll keep tracks on everything there and tons of stuff. Matt and Austin got a bunch of stuff. Matt got a ton of stuff last night that we'll be working through the next couple of days. And again, you know, there'll be a lot of talk about football because you have put yourself in a position that every game can be extremely meaningful down the rest of the season, because you did what you had to do the last 2 weeks. You had to find a way to hold serve at home against two of your rivals, and Tennessee has absolutely done that. Was it pretty, Matt? It wasn't exactly how you wanted it done all the time, but they found a way, and now you put yourself where you want to be in the back half of the season, in the hunt.
Yep. I mean, Eric, when we talked about this on Trail Tidbits, what did we say? If you're Tennessee, you just got to find a way. Mm-hmm. You set everything up. You go on the, you know, have a chance with everything on the table in November. And now you've got a Kentucky team that you're coming off a bye week that looks like they could potentially be in shambles as you push towards Georgia for what will be another playoff implication game. I mean, I don't think you can ask for more right now.
Yep. No doubt about it. Again, 6-1, 3-1, and loads of improving. Tennessee can be a much better football team. That's the encouraging thing about it for sure. Big thanks as always to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the presenting sponsor of the Rocky Top Rewind. You can give them a call today, a free consultation, 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185. Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey, big time Tennessee fans, just like us. They can also help you out of a bind if you have that need, TN Trial Lawyers. For Matt Ray, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for your questions. We'll see you on the Journal's Quarters this week. All that and more right here on the Rocky Top Rewind.